A collective ignorance, a mistrust of finance today. It's detrimental to our personal and national financial security. And here to help us reimagine what the finance industry could be is Mihir Desai. He is the Mizuho Financial Group Professor of Finance at the Harvard Business School. And he's also a professor of law at the Harvard Law School and the author of a new book entitled The Wisdom of Finance, Discovering Humanity in the World of Risk and Return. Professor Desai, thanks very much for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What prompted you to write this book?
Well, it got started by accident, which is I was asked to give a talk to graduating students, and I realized that what I wanted to do was take finance and both humanize it and demystify it. I think finance is broken in some ways, and certainly it's perceived as broken. And so I think the path forward is first to make it accessible to people everywhere. Finance kind of cloaks itself in complexity, and we need to demystify it. So the book does that by telling stories. And then the second piece is to humanize it, which is to tell the stories that make people realize that the underlying ideas of finance are humanistic. They're not crass, and they actually can be used in a humanistic way.
You know, when you talk about demystifying financial concepts, part of the problem is that finance can be complicated. It's not just jargon. It's when you're talking about derivative concepts and you're talking about, you know, a high theory that is based on the transfer of money that a lot of people just simply don't even understand to begin with. How do you go about doing that?
Well, so there's no doubt that, you know, the intricacies of a CDO are fairly complex. But the underlying ideas of what a derivative instrument, for example, are, the way I try to explain it is by going back to the first person who pioneered the use of options, which is Thales, the father of Greek philosophy. He's the first option contract writer. He put down a deposit to rent out olive presses. And so you can tell the stories that actually undergird a lot of these financial technologies in a way that makes it a lot more easy to understand.
Why do you think that finance has such a bad reputation?
Well, I think partly because it's well-earned. I mean, I think there have been problems. And I think there are areas where finance has become somewhat extractive rather than value-creating. But the larger point is that people are looking for something to blame today. They're upset with their economic prospects, and finance is an easy and attractive target to them. And as a consequence, we have a profession which has gotten demonized, which has really bad consequences. It's bad because people within the profession actually don't have as much to aspire to. So in the book, I wanted to say, look, the underlying ideas are actually quite noble. We should make finance aspirational as opposed to defining it downward and expecting less and less.
I wonder if you could tell us, what does Jane Austen have to do with risk management?
Well, it turns out everything. So in the second chapter on risk management, I try to use Anthony Trollope and Jane Austen, Pride and Prejudice, to talk about risk management. Because underneath most of those novels is the problem of a young woman in the marriage market who has to manage risks, right? So if you think about Mr. Collins's proposal to Lizzie, he's playing off her risk aversion. It's one of the worst proposals ever, basically. You know, you're not that attractive, you're not that rich, you better take my bid before you kind of become too old. And she has to kind of gamble by waiting for Mr. Darcy. And the really interesting part about that risk management problem in Phineas Finn by Anthony Trollope, the character Violet Effingham actually divines both diversification and options. She doesn't call it that, but she uses it. So she says, for example, you know, she's bemoaning the lack of unable to pick among suitors. And she says, you know, if only I could marry 10. Which is a way of saying diversification. And then she finally says, you know what I'm going to do? She's not a fan of romantic love. She basically says, I'm going to pile up a few different possibilities. And then when I'm ready, I'm going to get married, which is kind of acquiring a portfolio of options and then exercising one when you're ready. So she actually got risk management in a deep way before, you know, we had the equations to prove it.
Mihir, you teach finance at Harvard, and I imagine that you have seen many students and you've seen perhaps a change in them and the concern, especially since the 2008 financial crisis, about the reputation that finance has had. Can you explain?
Yeah, no, I think it's been you know, really problematic. So finance has become less and less viewed as an aspirational profession. Recently, I was speaking to about 40 or 50 of them, and I asked them how many of them were going into finance. A whole bunch raised their hand. And I said, how many of you expect to be in finance in 10 years? And the number was a quarter of that, which is a way of saying they kind of did it for now, but they don't feel it's part of their identity.
In other words, they're doing it for the money so they can go on and do what they really believe in?
No, I think they're doing it because they like it, and then they're ashamed of it. Because it's looked at in a way that is problematic. And that's terrible. Why? Because, you know, finance is hugely important to the economy. If we don't get finance right, we've seen what happens. And so we want really good people going into it who aspire to be doing great things. And so what the book says is actually finance is central. If you think about the two big solutions to the world's problems today in finance, one is regulation and the second is outrage, you know, just occupy. I think both of those are unproductive. Outrage isn't going anywhere, and regulation we know has counterproductive consequences. So the idea in the book is to say, let's just get back to the nobility of the ideas. Because if we get back to the nobility of the ideas, that in the long run is the way people start behaving better.
Is the nobility, you referenced the nobility of ideas, does that include personal accountability?
Yeah.
Because it's one thing if you're playing with other people's money, and it's another when you're playing with your own reputation and your own money.
Absolutely. So there are several times in the book where I use the ideas of, for example, leverage to talk about reputation and to talk about personal accountability. So leverage is a good example. Of course, I use a variety of ways to talk about it, but one of them is The Merchant of Venice, you know, which is just a way of saying people think that's a play about debt. There's a debt contract between Antonio and Shylock. And the answer, of course, is if you look at the text, it's actually about commitments. Right? It's all about commitments between people. That's what most scholars think that play is about. So I try to use that to kind of say that's what leverage is. It's a commitment. And leverage is fantastic. People in finance know that. You get to do things you have no right to do. That's why people in finance love it.
You get to create money.
You get to create money. And the same thing is true if you think about it in a variety of other ways. So the great quote from Jefferson is that, you know, your reputation is the most important lever, because people will allow you to do things you have no right to do. And protecting that reputation and behaving in that way is really, really critical.
So you started out by saying that finance used to be thought of as a noble profession. But I can think of a lot of times during history where finance or debt was considered somewhat dirty and people wanted to have it somewhat removed from themselves. What's the golden era that you would like to see some kind of resurrection of?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I think there's always been problematic, because debt has always been problematic. But that was born of real ignorance, right? You know, money is barren. How can you do these things? And also sometimes anti-Semitism was associated with that as well. So I don't know if there really has been a golden era. What I'm trying to just suggest is let's get back to the ideas, because we are so far removed from them. And this is why the practice of finance has got to wake up. They can't just say, you know, I'm doing God's work and I'm great. You got to be able to say we have problems, but we actually do something really important, and we can get back to things that are actually really value creating.
Mihir Desai, thank you so much for joining us. Mihir Desai is Mizuho Financial Group Professor of Finance at Harvard Business School, as well as a professor of law at Harvard Law School. And he joins us here in our Bloomberg 1130 studios. He just wrote a new book, The Wisdom of Finance, Discovering Humanity in the World of Risk and Return. Really fascinating.